This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Some of the parents whose babies died at the Countess of Chester Hospital between 2015 and 2016 went home from that hospital and grieved. They held funerals. They picked out tiny coffins. They tried to make sense of losing a child they had barely had the chance to meet. And they did it all believing their babies had died from natural causes. No one from the hospital told them an investigation was happening. No one told them doctors suspected foul play. No one told them the death certificates they were holding might be wrong. They moved through the worst experience of their lives without information that the institution had and chose not to share. Years later, those same families sat in a Manchester courtroom and heard a jury say their children had been murdered. And here's the part that should make every person listening take pause, even after the convictions. The causes of death listed on some of those original certificates still read natural or unknown. And with the inquiry that's going on now, that may actually be the right answer. After being drugged through the mud and said, oh, it's natural, then they were murdered. Maybe they weren't. We don't really know. You just go sit over here with that, Mom and Dad. I can't imagine. The Cheshire Coroner's Court has now opened formal inquests into five of the babies Leffie was convicted of killing, with full hearings scheduled pending the outcome of the public inquiry years after the verdict, after the sentencing, after the headlines and the documentaries. The parents of murdered babies are still fighting to have the truth written down on a piece of paper. This piece here is the final in our five-part series on Lucy Letby. If you're just catching us right now, go back in the week, every day on our channel here, wherever you're watching us. We've released an episode every day. There's five parts to this whole series, and I invite you to watch them all for the full context, because it's important. It's not a story about one nurse. It's a story about a system, multiple overlapping systems. It failed at every single level, Jerry. Levels! The hospital that suppressed warnings, the regulators who never stepped in, the legal process that took years to bring charges, the families who were kept in the dark, the death certificates that still need correcting, the arrests that came nearly a decade too late, the inquiry whose findings will shape NHS practice for a generation. And the larger question that this case forces every healthcare institution in the country and beyond to confront: when patients in your building die under suspicious circumstances and your staff are sounding the alarm, who is your organization empowered to actually, who in the organization is empowered to actually act on it? That's the big question here. The Thirlwall Inquiry was established in 2023 after Lucy Letby's first conviction. It is chaired by Lady Justice Thirlwall, a senior judge at the Court of Appeal. Its mandate is specific and important. It does not exist to retry the case or to determine whether Letby was correctly convicted. It operates on the legal assumption that the convictions are valid. Its purpose is to answer a different question entirely. How was this allowed to happen? How did a hospital fail so completely that, according to the prosecution's case, babies were harmed over a 12-month period while doctors raised alarms that were systematically ignored? The inquiry has heard testimony from parents, from doctors, from nurses, from hospital executives, from external reviewers, from regulators. Its evidence phase has concluded. A final report is expected in 2026, and what it has uncovered along the way has been in many respects more disturbing than the actual trial itself. What makes the third wall inquiry uniquely valuable is not just the conclusions it will eventually reach, but the volume of previously unseen materials it's brought into public view. Internal emails, grievance files, draft reports by external reviewers that never saw daylight at the time, handwritten meeting notes, minutes from quality surveillance meetings. The inquiry has forced the disclosure of documents that the hospital had kept out of public view for years. Every new document answers some questions and raises new ones. Every new piece of testimony reshapes the picture of what the institution knew, when it knew it, what it chose to do with that information. Nurses on the unit told the inquiry a different but equally troubling story. Many of them said that they had no concerns about Lucy Leppe's conduct personally and that their colleagues had been a source of camaraderie and support. But they also described chronic understaffing, immense pressure, and concerns about patient acuity, the term medical professionals use to describe how sick the patients are in a unit. The neonatal ward, according to multiple witnesses, was being asked to handle increasingly complex cases without the staffing or resources to actually do it safely. That is its own story, and it raises uncomfortable questions about whether the working conditions on that unit contributed to a baseline level of risk that made everything else worse. It does not absolve anyone of accountability for what happened, but it is part of the picture that the inquiry is required to assemble. An audit from Liverpool Women's Hospital, where Letby had completed clinical placements before being hired full-time at Chester, surfaced as part of the inquiry's work. According to that audit, breathing tube dislodgements occurred daily, 40% of shifts Letby worked at Liverpool. That figure alone does not prove anything criminal. Tube dislodgements happen in neonatal care, but the percentage was striking enough to raise the question of whether warning signs had existed long before Letby ever set foot at the Countess of Chester, and whether anyone had been in a position to see them. Part of what has made the Thirlwell process so emotionally significant for the families is the opportunity to finally have their experiences heard in an actual official setting. Parents testified about how they learned of their baby's deaths, how they were treated by hospital staff in the aftermath, what they were told and what they were not told, how long it took for anyone to give them honest information. Some of them spoke publicly about the deaths of their children for the first time. Their testimony is now part of the permanent record of what happened at the Countess of Chester. The inquiry has also sent warning letters to individuals who may be subject to significant or explicit criticism in the final report. That is a standard procedural step in British public inquiries, a chance for those who will be named negatively to respond before publication. It is also a signal that the report, when it arrives, will not be vague. It will name specific people. It will assign public blame. And the final report itself is scheduled for publication any day now, making the inquiry's findings an imminent and significant moment in this story. And those warning letters will arrive at the same moment that Cheshire Police's criminal investigation into hospital leadership is still active. As discussed in the previous episode, three senior figures at the Countess of Chester were arrested in June of 2025 on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter. All three remain presumed innocent, and no formal charges have been filed as of this recording. But the concurrence of an ongoing criminal inquiry with a public inquiry preparing to issue significant criticism creates something unusual in British legal history. Two separate accountability processes operating in parallel, both focused on the same set of decisions made by the same small group of people. Whatever the Thirlwell report concludes, it will land in an environment where the consequences for the individuals named may extend well beyond reputational damage. This case now exists in multiple simultaneous legal and investigative tracks, and that simultaneously is part of what makes it so unusual. The Criminal Case Review Commission is reviewing whether Leppe's convictions are safe, with international medical experts contributing dossiers of new analysis. The Thirlwell Inquiry is preparing its final report on the institutional failures that allowed the crisis to unfold. Three hospital executives face potential criminal charges related to the failure to act on warnings. The Cheshire Coroner's Court has announced formal inquests into babies whose death certificates remain officially listed as natural or unknown. Netflix released that feature documentary in February of 26 titled The Investigation of Lucy Leppe, which brought the case to a global audience of hundreds of millions, of reignited a debate about every aspect of the conviction. None of these processes is operating in isolation. Each one feeds into others. Each one shapes public perception, expert opinion, and the political pressure surrounding the case. There's a deep structural tension built into these parallel tracks that is worth understanding. The third wall inquiry is legally required to operate on the assumption that Lucy Leppe's convictions are valid. Its work is premised on the idea that babies were deliberately harmed, but the hospital failed to stop it. At the same time, the Criminal Cases Review Commission is examining whether those convictions were safe in the first place. If the CCRC eventually refers the case back to the Court of Appeal and the convictions are overturned, the entire factual foundation of the Thirlwall inquiry would be called into question, and Leppe's Verster has already called for the inquiry to be paused until the CCRC completes its review. That application was refused, so the inquiry continues, preparing to assign blame for crimes, and another legal process is examining whether they even occurred. Are you following along? It's not a stable situation. It is a kind of contradiction that only resolves one way or the other. And the resolution, whichever direction it lands, will reshape British criminal justice. For the families, resolution remains distant in ways most people cannot imagine. Some of them believe the jury got it right and want the public's focus to stay on the system that allowed a convicted killer to operate unchecked for so long. They want the hospital executives held accountable. They want the death certificates corrected. They want the public inquiry to assign blame in clear, specific language. Others have watched the expert panels, read the reporting, seen the documentaries. They're left wondering whether they have the full picture of what actually happened to their children. They're caught in an excruciating position, needing the truth, but not knowing whether the truth they are given is the complete one. There's no comfortable resolution available to either group. The legal system has rendered its verdict. The scientific debate is ongoing. The institutional accountability process is incomplete. And the children at the center of all of it cannot speak for themselves. This case is, in the end, a mirror being held up to every healthcare institution that says it prioritizes patient safety. It asks a series of questions that should make every hospital administrator, every medical director, every NHS trust board profoundly uncomfortable. When the people inside your building raised the alarm, who listened? When the evidence was ambiguous, who demanded clarity? When the most vulnerable patients in the hospital were dying at unprecedented rates, who chose to protect the institution instead of protecting them? When doctors warned that something was wrong, did your culture treat them as essential whistleblowers or as inconvenient troublemakers? Those are not abstract questions. They are questions with names attached to them, with babies whose lives ended in a neonatal unit while the people in charge looked elsewhere. Whatever the Criminal Case Review Commission ultimately decides about the safety of Lucy Leppe's convictions, whether the Thirlwall inquiry concludes about institutional failure, whatever happens with the three arrested hospital executives, this much is already established beyond serious dispute. The Countess of Chester Hospital failed to act on warnings raised by its own consultant pediatricians. The delay between when concerns were first raised and when police were finally contacted was measured in years, not weeks. The families of babies who died were kept in the dark about an internal investigation that directly concerned the deaths of their children. Whether Lucy Leppy is the most prolific child killer in modern British history or the victim of a catastrophic miscarriage of justice, the system that produced her trial and the controversy that surrounds it was not working the same way it was supposed to. And the institutional culture that allowed all of it to unfold is not unique to one English district hospital. It exists in varying degrees wherever reputation is permitted to outweigh patient safety. If there is a verdict that this case demands, it is not the one that has already been delivered. It is a verdict on every institution that ever asked its workers to choose between speaking up and keeping their jobs. On every executive who ever decided that internal review was easier than calling the police. On every system that put the protection of an institution ahead of the protection of its patients. The babies are gone. The conviction is contested, the inquiry continues, and the only thing the rest of us can decide now is whether we're willing to listen the next time a doctor walks into a manager's office and says, something is very wrong here and we need to act now. It's an angering case. My goodness. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Was justice served? Is Lucy Leppy guilty of the crimes that she has been convicted of? Or was she a scapegoat for a system that has far greater problems than one neonatal nurse that had evidence manipulated and presented in such a constricted, manipulative way that there was no other way to look at her than guilty? Not saying she's not, but shouldn't the evidence stand on its own, not be manipulated, not be presented in a way that one would market Doritos? We're only gonna let you see this part. We're not gonna dunk into the details of what's in all this stuff. I mean, that might turn people away. When you blind a jury to half of the information and then get a verdict, is that verdict accurate? I don't think one could say it actually is. And that's, again, not to say that she's not guilty, but she didn't get there ethically, morally, or correctly. And if some of these inquiries are correct, legally. Either. Again, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation there. Press subscribe. Do appreciate that. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.